This is 90.7 FM WGXC. You're listening to Japanther. Meet you later from Beats, Lines, and Rocks.
Sounded like a seagull, turned out to be a siren, but not the good kind. Red and blue wine. I've got too many problems, they never seem to end. It all depends on what you call a problem, and when you meet your ending, will Peter be demanding one more question?
What's going on, everybody? It's Slay Diddy, a.k.a. Professor Slay, a.k.a. Mr. WGXC, and you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Listen in, y'all.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
Back in LA, some restriction applied.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Stephanie Flashman of Columbiaville, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening. This is Kevin Factor, and you're listening to Foraging Ahead. And tonight on Foraging Ahead, we're going to forage into literacy. And my guest tonight is Larissa Phillips. Larissa is the founder and director of the Volunteer Literacy Project, a nonprofit organization that trains volunteers to teach reading to adults. And since discovering 15 years ago that structured phonics was almost non-existent in the adult ed world, she has worked to offer evidence-backed methods of teaching reading to adults who can't read. I think I might need a little help there. She is author of City Stories, Towns and Press, in 2018, a collection of decodable stories for teen and adult beginning readers, as well as the author of Rex Runs Off, a series of decodable chapter books for older elementary children who are struggling readers. All of these books were written to respond to the tremendous need for beginning reading materials at the upper elementary, teen, and adult levels. And when she's not training volunteers or teaching reading to adults, Larissa lives on a farm in Greene County with ponies, sheep, and chickens. And I might also add, Larissa is a fine storyteller who won a story slam a couple years ago.
Before
the pandemic. Yeah. So welcome, Larissa.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So there's got so much to get into.
Yeah.
But could you tell me how you got interested or into literacy? Were you a trained teacher, or how did you come to this or see this need and then try and fill it?
Yeah. I had no interest or designs on going into education at all. I was an editor and a writer in an industry that was slowly shutting, shutting all its doors. And I got a job, sort of randomly got a job running a GED program. And it worked for, it was part-time. It worked for me with having little kids and at home. And I worked two long days, and it was great. And then I started getting people who couldn't read, who would come in and, there was no hope of them getting, even studying for the GED. They literally couldn't read. And I was like, oh, cool, no problem. I can help you guys. Sure, I know how to read, so it's probably easy to teach reading, mm-hmm. right? And then I very quickly found out it's not easy to teach reading. It's not intuitive, particularly with people who have gone decades without being able to learn to read. You're dealing with kind of the most remedial population and the most dyslexic or the most disadvantaged. And so then I started asking around, and I found out that nobody in the adult ed world knew how to teach reading.
Really?
Yeah. The things that I heard were so shocking. From directors of foundations, from education directors, from teachers, I heard again and again things like, it's never really been proven you can teach them to read. I don't think anyone really knows how to do that. Are they retarded?
Whoa.
Yeah, really kind of ignorant and uneducated responses. So I just kept searching. And meanwhile, and this is kind of the thing that is sort of the most important to me, is that the students never left. So these students who had come, and they kept coming, and pretty soon I had five or six or seven, and they just kept coming, and they wouldn't leave.
What do you mean they wouldn't leave?
They wouldn't leave my program. They kept hanging out. They kept coming,
uh-huh.
and they would just sit patiently, waiting for me to figure this out. And I found myself really, first of all, I would chat with them, so I got to know them, and I really liked them. And I found myself really inspired by them. And their persistence and their just absolute dedication to the idea that they needed to learn how to read was really moving to me. It wasn't something I could walk away from.
Huh.
So I kept looking. I finally discovered in the children's ed world, I discovered how to teach reading. And I got certified, and I brought the program back to my program. And I had this big problem of how to teach volunteers how to teach reading. And that's been kind of my mountain to climb ever since then.
Mm-hmm. So so what's the difference between teaching adults how to read and teaching children how to read?
Well, there's a lot of evidence at this point there's been so many studies and so much research done on how to teach reading, and basically everybody learns how to read in the same way. Your brain is going through the same process of connecting sounds and symbols, putting it together. Whether you are, learned to read at 3 years old and you figured it out, or whether you are dyslexic and had to get really intensive tutoring or anything in between, we all learn how to read the same way. But adults, I think there are some extra problems, extra struggles, because they've oddly, almost counterintuitively, because they've been living in the world of print for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So they have experiences with print, and they've come up with strategies that are often not good strategies.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, can I just say when I think about it, and I work with young people as well, not young as well, but I work with young people, that learning how to read is unbelievably difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so amazing that human beings have figured out this system to transmit language and thought.
I totally agree. Yeah.
With these printed symbols, and of all the languages, English, of all the phonetic languages anyway, English is really one of the most difficult ones.
It is difficult. They call it, it's opaque. It's an opaque language. Yeah, exactly.
That is kind.
Opposed to transparent. Like, Italian's very transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything is
as
just right there.
I mean, it's... Yeah. I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to do it, but...
And it's largely... I mean, one of the main reasons is because Italian comes... Like, 95% of Italian words come directly from Latin.
Yeah.
It has one source. And English has multiple sources. Yeah. And I like to say it's a rich, it's a rich language. You know, and it really is. It's like a rich and really beautiful language that has so many, it's so expressive. And even just being able to speak English well is really an incredible thing.
Well, that's another question, and I'm sorry, hopefully I won't derail you with this. But it seems to me that, like, there's so many facets to literacy. Being able to speak well, being able to listen well, and to take away... complicated stories and language and subtext. Are these considered part of literacy, or you're
absolutely.
Just dealing? Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of the big struggle in the literacy world right now is between sort of the two main branches of how to teach reading.
Mm-hmm.
If you can be so simplistic, but
what are those two branches?
So the one comes from, I would say it originally comes from whole language.
Mm-hmm. And what's that? I'm sorry. I'm gonna,
No.
I mean,
no,
I know,
yeah,
or
yeah,
maybe
no,
I should
absolutely.
Say, I think I know.
Yeah.
But
so,
it won't hurt to hear.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Whole language and its various relations are basically trying to look at reading not through a sound to symbol relationship. So reading.
It's using, like Chinese.
Using pictures, yeah. Like using looking at the words as almost like pictures or images, using context. Using experience, using syntax, using a whole lot of ways to read the text that only uses phonics as a last resort.
Huh, which is, it seems strange to me. And when did whole language come into popular pedagogy?
It's had various permutations and the sort of the split of these two sort of main approaches to teaching reading goes back to really like the 1800s.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's been fought over for a really long time because reading is complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you do use context and you do use syntax and you do use experience, you know, and phonics does feel like a last resort, you know, sounding out the word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one branch, and it's had different evolutions, you know, where like in the 40s and 50s, it was look, say, like the Dick and Jane books, where the idea was if you just presented the word over and over again,
mm-hmm.
the student would memorize it.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into Dr. Seuss, which was another version of look, say, where
right.
It was, they were just like, well, let's make it more interesting anyway.
Right.
You know, the student's still going to be like memorizing words, but at least it's fun and interesting.
But with Dr. Seuss, I mean, he sound was an integral part of a lot of those stories in terms of rhyming.
Sure, rhyming. Yeah. There's not really a lot of evidence that rhyming helps with learning to read.
No.
Yeah. They're great books, but they're not great for a beginning reader.
Huh.
And if you look at like even a sentence out of, say, Cat in the Hat, which
right.
Cat in the Hat is a wonderful phrase.
Right.
And it sounds like, oh, Cat in the Hat. Those cat and hat both have a short vowel. They're both the same construction, a consonant, vowel, consonant. So that's a perfect setup for a beginning reader. But that most of the sentences in Cat in the Hat are far more complex than that. And there will be one sentence with like five different word constructions in there. Yeah. So they're not great for beginning readers.
It sounds like you've actually sort of looked at that and decided that.
Yeah. I have looked at it.
Wow. Neat.
Yeah. So after the doctor said the look, say method, then they got into like real whole language, which was very like groovy and kind of in the 70s, like, you know, where you were going to kind of like, just really inundate children with like the joy of reading. I mean, it sounds beautiful. I get it. I totally get why, you know, why it was appealing.
Right.
You know, we're just going to read to them a lot, which is beautiful, and you should read to them a lot, and it'll be really quality literature. And yes, it all sounds great, but it didn't work. It didn't teach, you know, children how to read. And so that kind of pretty much fell out of favor by the 90s. And then another kind of, it rose from the dead, kind of like, you know, like the phoenix from the ashes, and was called balanced literacy.
Okay.
And balanced literacy was like in the 90s and the 10s, and it's still around. And that was going to mix. It was going to be like a compromise between phonics and whole language.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of had a bunch of different offshoots that are still really, really popular now, which the two most sort of widely used ones are Fontes and Pinnell, which is not so much in the Northeast. In the Northeast, we mostly have used Lucy Calkins from Teachers College, the reading and writing workshop. Like, that was what New York City was using. And that's what most schools, I think, that I know of in the Northeast were, and many still are, using.
Huh.
And that was like a workshop method for teaching reading.
Okay.
Where in, you know, which is just sort of funny, like the workshop method for first graders. Okay. So you would do like a little mini lesson.
Okay.
And then the kids would disperse with a book, and they would, and there'd be like a cozy nook and like some pillows and cushions, and the kid would read by themselves, and then you'd stop and you'd share, and you know, and it's great if the kids know how to read, it's great. But if the kids don't know how to read, and I've heard so many examples of kids sitting, parents talking about, or teachers talking about the kids sitting in the corner being like pretending to read, which is a terrible, terrible image, you know, like a first grader or a kindergartner sent off to read, and they're sitting there like, I can't do this.
Mm.
And then what do? They pretend that they're doing it.
Mm. Well, it's heartbreaking.
I mean, it is really heartbreaking.
Oh, wow.
It's like just right then and there, like, you don't belong here. This isn't for you. And they haven't been given the strategies or the materials to be successful.
Hmm.
So
I find that hard to believe that the teachers wouldn't recognize that, and then
it's a really wild
want to do that. I mean, I work with a lot of kids who are not
good readers,
terribly successful, and in school, and they're like, oh, you can decode.
Yeah,
but you
can't understand what you're reading.
Right?
Yeah, and you can't decode words you don't know, right?
Or you could sound them out. But I mean, if your working vocabulary like is limited, you're not gonna.
Yeah. So let me get back.
Yeah.
So,
no, I'm sorry. I'm going off.
Because it's a really clear path. So there's the balanced literacy, which is really popular still, and then the other path is like sort of commonly known as phonics.
Mm.
But one of the criticisms of phonics, which is, it's kind of a false criticism, is that it takes more than decoding to be a reader.
Mm.
You know, you do have to decode, and you do have to learn. The majority of kids need explicit direct instruction in how to connect the sound to the symbol, and how to put those sounds together and those symbols together and take them apart. How to read, how to decode and encode.
Now, Sesame Street.
Great.
They
don't do it anymore, though.
But they used to. I remember, like, when I was a little kid, and actually Sesame Street was new.
Yeah.
It
was intended to be educational.
Well, yeah, no, it was. But they would be, like, the two mouths.
Yeah.
Right?
Was that the Electric Company?
Silhouette. Oh, maybe that was the Electric Company.
That was fantastic.
And that was, it was phonics.
Yeah, that was phonics.
It was
totally.
Like, you know, and then a F would pop out,
yeah,
and another one would go O, and a O-U-L-L, yeah. And then
they'd both say it
and
together.
They both say it together,
yeah.
And
it's amazing.
Like,
why don't they still do that?
Oh, they don't.
No.
So
anyway, so phonics, the phonics side, I'm going to defend the phonics side because it's not just about decoding.
Okay.
And even phonics is like kind of a misnomer. It's structured phonics is one way, like it's like the terminology is still kind of evolving because we're trying to be precise, and phonics doesn't cut it. So it's more one way to describe it is there are pillars of reading.
Okay.
And one of the pillars is phonics. There's also vocabulary. There's fluency. You know, because if you're reading staccato, it's really difficult to understand what you're reading.
Mm.
There's comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing? There's phonemic awareness, which is like understanding the sounds, understanding that, you know, that the word cat has three sounds in it, and the sounds are k, at.
Mm.
That's phonemic awareness. And then there's phonics. And so those are the five pillars. And then a sixth one is now being kind of added, which is background knowledge or content knowledge. Because if you don't know what you're reading about, which I always imagine, like, if I'm reading a physics textbook, I can decode everything, but I don't really have a great picture in my mind of what's happening. I don't really understand it. So you really need to know. And there's this famous study, the baseball study, that took two groups of kids, and one group were really excellent readers and one group were not good readers. But the excellent, and they had to read a passage about baseball. The excellent readers knew nothing about baseball. The poor readers knew a lot about baseball. So who do you think understood the passage better? The poor readers understood it better.
Nice.
Because background knowledge or content knowledge is really important. Like, so you're missing, if you're missing all that, even if you learn how to decode, you can't, you're not really a fluent reader, you know? So there's a lot. It's just so much. You can see why I get the other side. I think it's failed. And I think we need more phonics. We need more direct instruction in general, right? Not just for reading. I think direct instruction has kind of really fallen out of favor. And there's a lot of evidence to show that direct instruction is absolutely the more effective way to teach. So all of that, I think, has to come back. But we do still need good literature and a lot of reading and background knowledge, everything, field trips, all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. No, it's a complex.
No, it is. It's complex, and I'm glad we have ample time to explore it. So while I was looking up like statistics and literacy and in this country and in and throughout the world, something like 86% of the world is literate. But you start looking around, and literacy is defined in a lot of different ways. United States, on average, 79% of U.S. adults are literate, which means that 21% of U.S. adults are
not literate.
Not literate. Now, you don't like the word illiterate.
I hate that word. Because almost every student I've ever had comes in with some literacy. So it's just a real, it's not accurate, and it also has a lot of judgment attached to it.
So what's behind that number? Like, why, like, how do you define literacy? Is that too big of a question?
That's a big question. The literacy that it's actually, it's a really,
like, there are levels of, you know, like level one, you know, so and so is reading on a third grade level. There's another amazing stat that 130 million Americans read below the sixth grade level. I mean, I think when I was growing up, they said, the New York Times is written for an eighth grade level, you know, and I remember trying to read it in eighth grade and really having a tough time.
I thought it was 10th grade level.
No, it was, I think it was some mythical eighth grade in some golden past that never existed.
Right, I know, because if you've seen those eighth grade exams from like the 20s and 30s, like the eighth grade graduation exam, it's like college level now.
Well, that's it too. I mean, I have seen, and in a school district that I taught in, and the English library, you know, where the class sets of books are, there is so much YA literature which is being taught to, I mean, young adults, but it's not the stuff that, you know, we had in high school, which was difficult. Difficult literature, and we had teachers who loved it and would, you know, and you'd struggle through it and probably not like it, but
which on the one hand is a shame, because then if you read it 20 years later, like if you reread that stuff now, you're like, oh, the brilliance, the genius, you know, and when you're 16, you were like, oh my God.
Exactly. Weird, oh, I don't care about this ship guy with the boat and the whale, you know, but, yeah, no, later, I read Melville in grad school, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy's a genius, you know. There was no way a 16-, 17-year-old could really get that. But, you know, also, it's It's like stretching anyway. But the books that are no longer taught are the classics, mm-hmm. and they just hadn't been taught for 20 years, just gathering dust in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Look, I'm going to say something really controversial.
Go on.
I'm not a fan of progressive education anymore. And I grew up totally 100% on board with progressive education. I went to Montessori school. I'm not against Montessori schools, but I unschooled my kids for a long time. Like, I unschooled them. And I, between that experience and between working with adults who can't read, I am just like the workshop method, the desks in the circle, the constructive education, like, you know, just you guys can figure out it on your, you guys are the experts already, you know, you're second grade scientists, you tell us, you know, like, I'm not a fan of it. I think it works for wealthy children whose parents are sending them to fancy camps and sending them to like mathnasium after school and getting tutors when anything goes wrong. It works for those kids. It's fantastic. The kids have a great time at school. School's fun, you know, but it doesn't work for the kids who don't have those resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I think public education should serve those kids who don't, whose parents are busy or overworked or don't speak English or don't, you know, who aren't educated. I'm just not a fan of it anymore. I don't think it's working. And I think now that the not working has trickled up to the kids whose parents have resources, so that basically very few kids are getting a great education anymore because it's so, it's open-ended. So yeah, that's where I stand.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
I'm the same.
Yeah, really?
Oh yeah.
Because you see it.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, I'm sorry. I do know more than you. It would be sad and tragic if I didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and in 20, 30 years, yeah, we will be equals.
Yeah,
you know,
right. But it's going to take a little work. You're going to
take a little work, and
and we want to fill up your brain with stuff, with information.
But there's, you know, the public schools are asked to do everything, absolutely everything.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that either.
No, but there's no place else.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we were talking a little earlier before we got in, how it's nice. Church is nice.
Yeah.
That it's a community, it's a place for people to get together, it's a people to listen to a sermon or your synagogue or you know, a mosque or whatever. You're listening to somebody speaking to you, right? And they have ideas and they're conveying. And that, I was thinking, was we were talking about that, oh, that's actually sort of contributes to the development of literacy.
Totally.
Understanding the spoken language, right? And having a space then for people to gather and, you know, talk, communicate, take care of the children, gossip, what have you. And
sort of nudge the teenager who's, you know, kind of
absolutely
needs other adults besides his parents.
And
at
the
that
teenager
moment,
and the
know?
Teenager sees where he fits more or less in sort of in the scheme of society, culture, and things like that. There is no other place in this country, consistently anyway, other than public school, where that happens. So it's asked to do everything.
Yeah, but it's such a mistake, I think. I mean, I see this in adult ed, too. There's a lot of effort to sort of provide almost therapy for the students when the students come in. I think it's so inappropriate and misguided. Mm. And I think that... in my view, I have a lot of students who, as I've gotten to know them through the years, I know that there's a lot of trauma in their past.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like the best thing I can offer them is like a safe, calm place where they can move forward in their goals. You know, that I feel like learning to read is probably the most fantastic thing that could happen to them. And the most, you know, even just making progress in that goal is going to be the most healing thing that is going to happen to them.
No, it's ironic. I think it's like self-esteem comes from within.
Yeah.
Right? It comes from...
And it comes from accomplishment.
It comes from struggle and accomplishment and overcoming things.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come from empty praise
exactly.
And stroking.
Oh, my God.
And, I hit a nerve with that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can't stand that. I grew up with a lot of that. The psychotherapist mom, she meant well. But yeah, a lot of empty praise, yeah. And it just means nothing. And what
no,
really,
it does. It devalues you, and what it does is it robs you of your actual ability to self-assess.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my son had a violin teacher who, super cheap, you know, really great musician, and every, you know, would praise, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. And it made no difference if he had practiced or hadn't practiced.
Yeah.
He was going to get, like, maximum praise. And I could see. And I actually said, look, like, you know when he hasn't practiced. Like, ease up on the pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Because he's going to go, oh, I guess I'm just a genius.
Yeah.
Right?
And what's the difference?
Or, and what's the difference, right?
It
makes
the
no difference.
Means nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm really.
My students don't have that problem with me.
Oh, good. Yeah. Mine don't either. I mean, yeah. I tell them right away when the reading students that I work with right away went, no, that's not right. Let's try again. You know, like immediate correction and immediate praise. So just immediate feedback is I think it's what I want when I'm in a learning situation.
Yeah.
And I've had the students tell me too. This happened so many times where a student will say, you know, I don't want to be rude, but I like that one tutor better than the other tutor. And I always want to know why. So I'm like, why? What are they doing that's different? And invariably, it's that the one tutor who they like tells them when they're wrong.
Because
they want to know when they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know, you know? And you think of anything that you've ever done where I'm always asking my tutors when I'm training them to remember times that they've been in a situation where they didn't know where the teacher was the expert and they were the novice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I ride horses.
Right.
And so my instructor is a way, way better rider than I am. And she gives me micro corrections all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She tells me when I'm doing a good job and she tells me when I'm not doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she doesn't say you're doing a bad job, but she's like, you know, move your leg back half an inch, you know, or like,
wow.
Like really micro corrections. And, and I do them and, you know, and it all comes together. So yeah, so I'm really into, immediate feedback, including,
but a lot of people have a very difficult time with corrections and negative feedback.
But it's not so much negative feedback as just a correction.
Correction.
So do people have trouble with that?
I think they've been, again, this is a rash generalization, but I feel that because they have had so
many trophies.
So many trophies and so little correction.
Mm-hmm.
And when the correction has come, it's been sort of a gut punch, or it's been...
I have to tell you, my experience is they love it. Those kids especially love it.
Oh, I guess I have no problem giving it.
I think they crave it.
Or getting it, yeah.
I do, when I'm not doing literacy, I have a farm, and I run a farm stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have kids come up, and they stay on my farm, and we do like a little sort of farm camp for 2 hours in the morning. I don't know if you know this, but so we do farm camp, and I get kids who it's just been like fascinating through the years, because I do have to correct some kids. I do have to like push them, because we do work. We do like real farm work, and I have to tell them, you know, no, this is what we're doing. And, or I have to tell them, no, these are the rules. Or I had this one kid who was super outgoing and just trying to take over. He was like 8 years old. He was bossing the little sibling around. And I got down to his level and I was like, whose farm is this? And he was like, yours. And I was like, who's the boss here? And he was like, you are. And I was like, who makes the rules? And like, I went through this and I was like, what's your job? And I led him to say, like, to listen to my rules. And this kid like loved me, you know, and it happens all the time.
They
realize too that I'm not, you know, then I'm like, okay, done. The correction's done. I'm not holding a grudge. Let's great. Now we're on an understanding. Let's move on and have fun.
That's
you know, and they love that. And those are the kids who like they'll come back and hug me at the end, you know, like they really do. I think that most people do really love constructive feedback.
I agree 100%. So we're going to take a very short musical break. While I was prepping for this interview, and I did prep. I came across dyslexia came up over and over and over and over again, which to me is fascinating. I'm not sure you've done a deep dive on dyslexia.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing about dyslexia is that dyslexia should almost be the default of human beings. because people who are dyslexic, one of the issues they have is recognizing the different positions of the same shape in space. And evolutionarily speaking, if you see a lion sitting down, and then you see a lion standing up, and you see the side of a lion and the back of a lion in a tree, you know it's a lion, right? That it, no matter what position it is taking, mm-hmm. it is this thing that might eat you, right?
Yeah.
But you take the letter P, it's the same shape as a letter B or as a Q, right? You could flip it around in space, and it completely changes
yeah.
how it is pronounced.
Yeah.
And when I read that, and I'm sure there's a lot there, I'm sure I know there's a lot more to it, but I was like, oh, that makes kind of perfect sense. And when I've had kids who are dyslexic, I tell them, I was like, no, your brain is fine. Like, it's just reading is really,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Asking you to do something that evolution has not necessarily prepared you for.
Yeah.
So speaking of dyslexia, you want to... add anything to that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Sorry. I will talk for a whole hour.
I thought we were going to take a break.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Yeah, no, I have two thoughts. One is it's also about processing sounds.
Mm.
So, and that seems to be the biggest issue for my students is processing sounds. And I right at the very beginning, before I even knew what I was doing, I was like, it's the sounds. Like, they can't hear the sounds. They can't reproduce the sounds. They can't recognize the sounds. And reading is about hearing the sounds.
Mm.
Like, you have to be able to tease apart the sounds. So that's kind of the bigger issue. And the letter position, that's really interesting because about your lion metaphor is interesting because one of the things that is not a problem almost ever with the students is the different fonts.
Mm.
So, like, you know how, like, A, if you handwrite an A, it looks one way, but if it's in print, it looks a different way?
Mm-hmm.
Never been a problem.
Huh.
Ever.
Huh.
Ever. The G, handwritten G or typewritten G, no problem whatsoever. Even the most dyslexic student, even the students who, like, the really, really extreme students who never went to a day of school and, like, don't know their letters, like, or they know the letters because that's what they've learned them, but they don't know the sounds. They have no problem with that. So
huh.
it is really interesting. It's like they there's a baby lion and there's an adult lion. Like maybe it's connected, you know, that they can just, they're like, no, that's a G, that's an E.
Hmm.
The difference between capital E, lowercase e, no problem.
Hmm. Hmm.
It was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, it sounds like then I've misapprehended that.
I don't know. it's a complicated issue.
It is very complicated.
It has a lot of different manifestations.
Oh, yeah. I got some music from some musicians who just happened to be dyslexic. And the people with dyslexia often come up with some remarkable coping mechanisms.
Absolutely. My mother used to say that they're often very charming.
Oh, yeah.
They've learned to, mm-hmm. It's a coping strategy.
Mm.
They're like, don't look at what I wrote. Listen to, like, my charm, you know.
Mm. Well, here's somebody who was never really accused of being charming, but one of my favorite.
Pedro lives out of the Wilshire Hotel. He looks out a window without glass. The walls are made of cardboard. Newspapers on his feet, and his father beats him because he's too tired to beg. He's got 9 brothers and sisters. They're brought up on their knees. It's hard to run when a coat hanger beats you on the thighs. Pedro dreams of being older and killing the old man, but that's a slim chance. He's going to the boulevard. He's gonna end up on the dirty boulevard. He's going out to the dirty boulevard. He's going down to the dirty boulevard. This room costs $2,000 a month. You can believe it, man, it's true. Somewhere a landlord's laughing until he wets his pants. No one dreams of being a doctor or a lawyer or anything. They dream of dealing on the dirty boulevard. Give me, you're hungry, you're tired, you're poor, I'll piss on them. That's what the statue of bigotry says. You're poor, huddled masses, let's club them to death and get it over with and just dump them on the boulevard. get him out on the dirty boulevard. Going out to the dirty boulevard. They're going down on the dirty boulevard. Going out. Outside, it's a bright night. There's an opera at Lincoln Center. Movie stars arrive by limousine. The Klieg lights shoot up over the skyline of Manhattan, but the lights are out on the mean streets. A small kid stands by the Lincoln Tunnel. He's selling plastic roses for a buck. The traffic's backed up to 39th Street. The TV whores are calling the cops out for a suck. And back at the wheelchair, Pedro sits there dreaming. He's found a book on magic in a garbage can. He looks at the pictures and stares up at the cracked ceiling. At the count of three, he says, I hope I can disappear and fly, fly away from this dirty boulevard. I want to fly, yeah. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly, 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 fly. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly away. I want to fly. Fly, fly away, yeah. I want to fly. Fly, fly away.
Fly, fly, fly away.
Fly, fly, fly,
fly, fly,
fly away.
Fly, fly away.
Fly, fly,
fly away.
Fly,
fly away.
Fly, fly away.
Fly,
fly
away.
Fly away.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. Though my pockets may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered, but in my heart I'd be a king. Your love is all that ever mattered. It's everything. So open your arms and you'll open the door to every treasure that I'm hoping for. Hold me and kiss me and tell me you're mine evermore. Must I forever be a beggar? These golden dreams will not come true. Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to you.
All right, those were a couple of my favorite dyslexic musicians. Lou Reed with Dirty Boulevard and Tony Bennett.
Amazing.
From 1962 with Dave Brubeck in the White House live recording. Tony Bennett, Rags to Riches. I'm in the studio with Larissa Phillips, the founder and director of the Volunteer Literacy Project. We're going to talk a little bit about how she started that and where she started it and what's going on there. I'd like you to to stay tuned for There with Alana Medlock, live from Ulster County, coming up after Foraging Ahead. And statistically, literacy, we're talking literacy, illiteracy, not illiteracy, non-literacy. New York had 22% of the population of New York, whole state, lacks basic prose literacy skill. Prose is sort of like newspapers, basically anything that's not poetry, you know.
Yeah.
I think they should just have poetry and then reading. And
yeah.
That's a whole separate category. You know? It's like,
but under that prose would also be like health information,
mm-hmm.
and you know, bills
fiction.
And fiction. Yeah, fiction.
Yeah.
Job applications. Restaurant menus.
Restaurant menus. Road signs.
Yeah, pretty much everything.
Yeah,
in print.
And everything except,
poetry.
Poetry, right? So it's just like saying the human body is toes and non-toes.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It's like, I don't know. I always had a problem with that. But 22% lack basic literacy skills. And Columbia County, there's a breakdown county. You can go online and check this out. Columbia County, 11% lacking basic literacy skills. And in Greene County, across the river, in Columbia Greene County, is WGXC's listening area, 13%. Mm. 13%. And Larissa, you're... so I want you to talk a little bit about the literacy project. You're operating one in Greene County now, is it?
Yeah.
So how did you get started? I know you filled a need that you saw when you were teaching GED, but tell me how you started your nonprofit and where and when and how.
Yeah. So once I learned how to teach reading, I brought it back to my program, and then I started trying to teach my volunteers. And I went through a whole, like, several years of work kind of scripting the program, adapting it to adults, writing stuff that was more adult-friendly, you know, because to me it just seems like it's bad enough you can't read, and then you're also supposed to read, like, children's stories about, like, you know, children going to birthday parties and, like, you know, like, unicorns and stuff. Like, you're an adult. You should have adult materials. Like, it just seems, like, respectful, you know? Like, there's something wrong with you. Like, oh, you're the only person in the world who can't read who's an adult, so the only thing we have is children's stuff. No, there's, like, millions of people who read below the third grade level in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think it's 48 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so there should be some materials for you that, you know, that recognize that adults are also learning how to read. So I just kind of, like, just embarked on this. Like, I kind of have joked it's, like, my watchtowers. You know, I just, like, keep, like, you know the watchtowers in L.A., the guy who's just, like, building those mosaic towers?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, right.
He just,
right.
like, keeps doing it and doing it. And that's, like, I'm just going to, like, keep building and building and building this program. And at a certain point, I was, like, it was just, like, working. Like, it was finally working, and it was coming together. And I was, like, I have to take this outside of this room that I'm in and, like, take it to other places. So I eventually formed a nonprofit, the Volunteer Literacy Project, and I've started trying to take it to other places. And this is all the nonprofit is in, like, the last year and a half. So this is new that I'm taking it beyond where I was. And one of the reasons I want to is because the state of adult ed is abysmal. I mean, it's really shocking and terrible what is offered to adults who can't read. And I do, like, slideshows in my trainings where I take you through, like, screenshots of, like, okay, here's the New York Public Library. Awesome. Of course you'd go there to learn how to read. And, oh, and look, they have a big education department. And, oh, look, there's adult services. Oh, and you keep clicking through the screens and it's like, oh, learn to read. And you click and you get to ESL and citizenship and success stories, which are great, all wonderful. ESL is awesome. Citizenship, great programs. But they're not teaching reading at the library. Mm. And there's every single adult literacy place that I know of does this. And the honest ones will admit that they do not teach reading below the fourth grade level or the third grade level. The rest will have it right on their website, basic literacy, adult basic ed, you know, learn to read, and then they don't have it.
Huh.
They just don't have it. Because it's not surprising because they don't know how to teach reading. Tell me if I'm wrong, please. Anybody out there, tell me if I'm wrong. But my understanding, and I'm always looking, is that my program is the only program that is a scripted program that volunteers can use to work with adults who want to learn how to read. Hmm. So it's friendly to volunteers and to adults, you know, and so that's rare. It's just not out there. And it's really, like, horrifying to think of, you know, the courage it takes. You know, you've been carrying this monkey on your back your whole life. You think it's something wrong with you. You think it's this massive failure. It's embarrassing and shameful. Mm-hmm. And I've heard this from, you know, direct conversations I've had, you know, and then you finally get up the courage. I had one student who told me that she was like, this is the year I'm going to learn how to read. And she went to church and she stood up in her church, which I mean, imagine standing up among your peers and sharing the worst thing about yourself, the thing that is the most shameful shortcoming that you have, and sharing that and saying, is there anybody out there who can help me? Like, that's what she did. I mean, it's like incredible. And she was lucky because one of the people in our congregation worked with me. So it was just pure chance that she sent her to me. But for most people, they're going to go through all this effort and, you know, and make this, I'm going to do it. That's it. You know, this is the time I'm going to do it. And they're going to get to the library and they're going to find out that they're working with volunteers who've been given no curriculum.
No curriculum, very little training.
Yeah, no training about how to, I mean, you need a curriculum. And the studies are very clear on this, that winging it doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's, I actually did literacy volunteer work in California, and it was exactly as you described it. There was no curriculum. There was, you know, just 2 seconds of training and, you know, go get them. And
yeah.
And I felt terrible. I was a young person. I didn't, you know, I had a life that I needed to live and, you know, myself. And it was.
Right. And how are you going to come up with that? Like how to, I mean, it took me years to figure it out and then to learn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's horrible. And then that student is going to leave like, oh, I tried and it didn't work.
No, exactly.
That once again,
no, it's going to go deeper and
me.
Deeper and deeper. And there's a lot of other issues, as you mentioned earlier, with students who don't know how to read. I mean, there's a lot of baggage that they're bringing in addition to not being able to
read. Yeah, they're missing vocabulary, they're missing content knowledge, et cetera.
But, so what does success look like in your program?
Oh, my God, that's such a hard question. it's one of the big diverging factors between children's education or children's literacy and adult literacy, because we're not trying to get people to college. You know, that's like, I think that with children's literacy, it's like there's this potential that you don't want to squander. You know, maybe this kid's going to go to MIT. Maybe this kid's going to, or at least get to college. You want to get them through high school. For many of the students that I work with, even the GED is a very, very far reach.
Mm.
You know, the GED is hard. And
it is,
you know, and it's
it
not
is.
Just reading. It's also content knowledge. It's science, social studies, writing, essays. You have to write a comparative essay at this point. You have to do algebra. So it's a really, really long road. So it's a very different thing, you know, and I have had some students who've gone on to get their GED or who've gone on to high school completion programs. But most of my students we're really trying to get them to be functionally literate. We're trying to get them so that they can be autonomous adults. They can read their bank statements. They can read their health statements. They can navigate a world that is filled with print.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they'll read the newspaper, some of them do start reading the newspaper. I don't. You know, that's a personal thing more than an ability. I mean, I know a lot of people who don't read the newspaper.
Oh, I know a lot. I read a statistic, and I don't believe it. That the average American reads 12 books a year.
That's really high.
I find that astonishing, right? But the mean is 4.
Yeah, even that, I think.
I find that ridiculously high. I think people.
I know so many people who don't read books at all.
Oh, yeah. No, there's.
And it's an effort to read at this point.
It is. There's so much. No. There's so much competition for your time,
and
there's so many more interesting, fun things to do
that are interactive and have people giving you praise or like commenting or yelling at you or whatever.
No.
Like social media is a really tough competitor when it comes to a book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see that with the adolescents and the young people that I work with. I'd be in the same boat if I was that age. You know,
I'm at my age, and I've always been like a really voracious reader, and I have to really force myself at this point to read. This is the time you said you were going to read. Put your phone down, and you know it's hard. So,
yeah, it is.
But anyway, yeah. So the literacy for adult literacy, the
it's
goals
just being
are
being able to navigate the world.
That's my goal.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly
and
reasonable goal.
I've heard some really amazing stories like that seem so small but are so significant. Like one of my students was lost. He would come. They come in and they're trying not to smile and they tell you these stories. And he was like, I was lost and I called my ex-wife because she was going to help me. And I started reading the street signs and she started yelling, "You can read." You know, like he couldn't, that was a new thing for him, you know? And
yeah, yeah.
I had another student who told me that I have like a bunch of slides that are photographs of signs in the city. And so we were going through it and there was one that said push or something, you know, on the door, push or pull. And he said that he never knew which one it said. And he just, And now he does. You know, he just didn't read. And part of it is just you turn yourself off from reading. You just disengage completely.
Yeah.
So you don't even try. But I just always pictured him like, you know, when you always get it wrong, you know, like, because you don't always read whether it's push or pull. Like, so you're always getting, you know, you push. Yeah. Oh, darn it. Oh, you know, you pull, you know. And I was just imagining that every time he did that, he was probably like, oh. You know,
all these people like, who can read never, yeah, you never, know, they you know, never push when he should pull or
yeah,
pull when he should
exactly.
push. But in fact, everybody does.
Everybody does that, yeah.
But, you know, it's funny you say it. It's like, you know, Americans have been exposed to Celsius for the last 50 years. You know, you see the temperature, oh, it's 79. And then you're like, oh, I know that. And then the next thing that comes on is the Celsius. You're like,
Yeah, you just don't read it.
You don't pay attention.
It's a perfect example. Yeah, or anything with a metric system. You're like,
So let's talk a little bit. If somebody wants to be a volunteer, I imagine,
if somebody
knows somebody who needs help with literacy as an adult or maybe a teenager, how can they contact you, or how can they? I have www.volunteerliteracyproject.org.
That's a great way. You can find me on Twitter too. If you're on Twitter, X, whatever. It's just my name, Larissa Phillips. You can find me on Facebook, Larissa Phillips, or the Volunteer Literacy Project. But yeah, can I real quick talk about the Greenville program?
Yeah, dude,
So I'm doing all of this down in the city. I've got the Volunteer Literacy Project, the nonprofit, and I started getting to know some people up here in the Albany area who are doing literacy work. And one of them lives in Greenville, and she's in Greenville Rotary. So she said, oh, you know, Rotary loves education. Let's see if we can get Rotary to run your program. So I went and presented at Rotary, and they loved it. And so they sponsored me to run my project in the Greenville Library.
Mm.
So we are now about to have the fourth week of training. I got an incredible group of volunteers, a lot of volunteers, which is like just lovely. I mean, I always say like people think I'm in this really depressing line of work, but I'm always like, I'm in this for the joy. I'm not a masochist. Like, it's just like beautiful. Like, I work with amazing, the students are amazing. And then I get to work with volunteers, and it's just a beautiful thing to see all these people coming out, like wanting to help their community. And so we've got the volunteers, and we're looking for students, which is always tough. It's hard to find the students because people who can't read hide.
Yeah.
It's one of the coping strategies is you don't let people know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't read, you know, you're not on Facebook generally, you're not reading flyers, you know? So we really depend a lot on word of mouth, and mm-hmm. that's how I've gotten generally most of my students is I'll have like a GED student who will be like, oh, you do reading. Oh, I have a friend, or I have a husband, or mm-hmm. I have a, you know, mm-hmm. sister or somebody who needs your help.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you're listening to this and you're out there and you know somebody who doesn't read, can't read,
struggles with reading, finds reading tiring,
mm-hmm.
you know, reading makes their head hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, they just really hate reading because there are people who like can read kind of like third, fourth grade level, but they can't get any further than that.
Mm.
And we will often we'll restart them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I call them balanced literacy casualties, you know, because they...
You don't really mince words. You call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So they could go to www.volunteerliteracyproject.org.
Yes.
Or Larissa Phillips on...
Yeah, on any of the social media platforms.
On the artist formerly known as... Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Any thoughts about bringing this into prisons?
I'd love to bring it to prisons. The prisons have it's a whole system. You have to go through the state. You have to get approval from the state. It's tough. I would love to go into the prisons.
I know Bard Prison Initiative.
Well, they're doing college.
They're doing college, but I mean,
I've reached out a little to them. They're doing their thing that they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that is magic, too, seeing.
Yeah. The potential, the squandered potential of people.
Who are incarcerated.
And there's a very high percentage of incarcerated people who have trouble reading,
mm-hmm.
who obviously aren't the Bard students, but...
No, I mean, that's a self-selecting group, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've had several on the show.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. like inspiring doesn't even begin
to
cover it.
Yeah.
But it's inspiring work that you're doing. And, I'm really, really happy that you could make the time and come out here and on this miserable evening and talk about literacy. And again, it's volunteerliteracyproject.org.